I'm not usually shy about using swear words, but there are a few more than usual in this episode. Sorry, not sorry. I have a lot to admit here on my first solo episode of the Beautiful Writers podcast about dashed book dreams and lessons learned. Three of my titles summoned me in the middle of the night late last summer, and it's taken me this long to process what I learned. It all started when I couldn't sleep that night and wandered across the hall from our bedroom into my office to find myself face to face with my floor to ceiling bookshelves. That's where, in the dead of night, my books told me to get real with myself and with you. A good mama doesn't protect her people only by focusing on the positive. So perhaps facing the ugly parts helps us access our magic. Let me ask, do you have a dramatic, addictive, up and down, hot and cold, or otherwise fraught relationship with your creativity? You love your writing, you hate your writing, or you're completely enthralled by your writing practice, even as loved ones worry you don't have the time or resources for this hobby. Or maybe you're surrounded by true believers, but your bustling schedule keeps fucking with your flow and you don't know how you're ever gonna get her done with time flying and the world in chaos. But writing and pursuing it is often the only thing that makes you feel sane, am I right? Even if the day-to-day of it threatens to break your heart. Is it worth it? Will it work out? How long until I know for sure? Sometimes you're willing to risk it all until it looks like you might actually have to. If this hits home, I created this episode for you. I'm Linda Sievertson, and I'm so glad you're here. Welcome. Lessons learned. Putting these thoughts together for you has felt a lot like writing an entire book. I think that's why it took me so long to create. A good way to frame what you're about to hear is that it's the short audiobook version, if you will, for my imaginary title on how to make this book shit easier. I call myself a book mama. Doesn't it make sense that I choose to learn things the hard way so you don't have to? At any rate, it seems so clear that I was supposed to make this episode for you that I went and got my phone, hit record on my voice memos, let the words and the tears flow, and then transcribed it to record here once I had processed everything. As for the format of this episode, for the first 12 minutes, yikes, I get real about some tough events in my life starting on launch day for Beautiful Writers, and about why I haven't shared this information earlier. At about 16 minutes, I walk you through an extremely healing impromptu book ritual I did that night that you may want to copy with your finished book or even one in progress. Then at around 27 minutes, I reveal 9 life or book lessons that summarized themselves for me that night after my tears had dried. There were so many ahas. I'm telling you, these tips are gold and could save you or make you a lot more money with your writing. I trust that because my sister, assistant, and sound engineer, all 3 tough customers, were as enthusiastic after hearing them as I was receiving them. So if you're short on time, you might want to fast forward to minute 27 for those 9. I'll also post a blog post with the tips in about a week or so. If you haven't already, subscribe to my free newsletter at bookmama.com and you'll be the first to know when I post it. If you are listening to this episode after the second week of March 2024, you can find that post by doing a search on my blog at bookmama for the title, My Greatest Advice for Hopeful Writers, Insider Tools I Wish I'd Known. Before we get to the drama, I do want to start off by saying that I am all about big thinking and not limiting my abundance or anyone else's. As a book proposal doctor, author whisperer, agent connector, idea fairy, and cheerleader for writers of all genres, I love big dreamers. I collect them. For instance, I'm about to record an episode with Rhonda Byrne of The Secret Film and Book Fame for this podcast. Who is more magical than Rhonda? I've long wanted to talk manifesting bestsellers with her. I'm also pairing a few top finance writers together for the show to help us get smarter with our money and be wildly prosperous, because that lights me up. But right now, I'm also feeling called to address some of the hard realities we writers face and some of my best workarounds. I have learned much about creating with both eyeballs tied behind my back. If you've ever read my website for my course, Book Proposal Magic, you know I say that my dogs and I eat rejection for breakfast. That line still makes me smile. And it's mostly true, as is the line, when the universe or some VIP publishing exec says no, I get scrappy and creative. But not always. Not so much the last few years, until some kind of fire in my belly returned recently. I don't know about you, but being scrappy and creative post-COVID was a challenge. Many of us learned we'd been running on adrenaline only to live through a different kind of 24/7 push as we tried to stay informed and healthy and pay the bills while reinventing ourselves as the world shut down. How do you stay one step ahead in uncharted territory? Most of us got sick and/or cared for loved ones as they got sick, and many of us emerged from those days shaken. We'd slowed down, dreamed different dreams, and didn't quite recognize ourselves without the same hustle goals, even as we produced new and meaningful creations. Make no mistake, you've been through a lot. Either mentally, emotionally, physically, probably all of the above. If you're feeling fallow, even amid surges of hope, energy, and inspiration, I'm there with you. If your emotions, writing practice, or results are all over the map, mine are too. Creativity asks that we expand past our comfort zones as we stay current on tech, brand building, and networking, not to mention our craft. I want to acknowledge how hard that can all feel. My sister, a Vedic astrologer, says there are only two benefic planets in this solar system. So if you came here for an easy life, you landed in the wrong place. Every time she says that, I laugh. Like, no shit, sister. Against that emotional backdrop, three of my books stepped up with messages for me, for us. Make it a solo pod, they said. Huh? Was that a thing? I honestly didn't know. Why would I go it alone when writers like Cheryl Strayed, Van Jones, Brené Brown, and Dean Koontz have been willing to come on the show? But a dear client of mine, now a friend, Jordan Younger, of the Balanced Blonde Soul on Fire podcast, she recently posted a stream of consciousness episode all by her lonesome, and I was riveted. Jordan talks fast, without notes, I'm guessing. She's my son's age, and those youngins are talented. The show was jam-packed, and I loved hearing her inner landscape. That's when I realized there's a lot of value in listening to a passionate expert riff about the ins and outs of their career, uninterrupted in this world of the quick soundbite. Back to being wired at 3 a.m., rubbing my eyes and staring at my bookshelves in the dim with moonlight streaming through my shutters. It was like I'd walked into a dream. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Looking at my life and body of work as if from a stranger's perspective. Oh my God, I was flooded with awe and gratitude, which was pivotal because earlier that day, I had a persistent negative thought that I hadn't done enough with my life. My to-do list was multiplying, and I was kicking myself that I still hadn't sent my press release or my beautiful writer's books out to media people, not to mention many of the people in the freaking book. Can you imagine? Beautiful writers, a journey of big dreams and messy manuscripts with tricks of the trade from best-selling authors, my latest book, had been out almost a year already. When was I going to get to it? Keep in mind, I've been in this industry a long time. I have contacts nearly everywhere. And yet, I'd hardly reached out to any of them. and I'd asked my publishing team not to either until I was ready. You know that saying that you never know what other people are going through? Here's the hard truth. People didn't hear from me because I didn't have it in me to do another thing. A super dramatic family emergency occurred the morning of my book launch. I dropped the phone, gutted and heartbroken, and things got worse from there. Every few days, while still dealing with the first disaster, it was something else. My closest friends could not believe how the hits to my personal and business life kept coming. By turns absurd, unbelievable, and tragic, my best friends didn't want to be obnoxious, but they kept calling for the next installment because my life had become a soap opera. Perhaps I shouldn't have expected anything different. Beautiful Writers is my coming of career memoir about my struggles to get my first book published. The storyline is fun and farcical and magical and filled with tons of how-tos, but it also covers ridiculous drama as my writing dreams are finally realized. Was my life once again imitating art? Did it have to? I pray I'm not scaring you away from wanting to publish. I swear the benefits far outweigh the negatives. That's why we talk about this shit, to give you a heads up so you can be forewarned and armed with better intel, to make stronger choices than you would otherwise going in unawares. I wish I could be more specific for you about how my life blew up the day of my Beautiful Writers book launch, share the low down dirty insider details, but the drama revolved around other people. People I adore who are now doing really well. Point being, it's not like I felt comfortable sharing these details on social media. I mean, I'm not an animal. As an aside, I did, however, post about our animals and their drama, their injuries, illness, even death. Ugh. I posted about some of that on Instagram, but not the part where I called my friend Guru Singh to see if he thought maybe I'd murdered a librarian in a past life and was getting my comeuppance. For the record, maybe. Make an altar and play chanting music for the next 40 days on a loop without stopping, he said. Done and done. Thanks, Goo. He hates it when I call him Goo, by the way. He says it means darkness or something. Sorry, Super Goo. As for my book PR, I rallied for a few events that were already booked. Thank you, Marie Forleo. Thank you, Martha Beck, Kate Northrup, Zibby Owens, Hal Elrod, and several other heavenly podcasters. Your enthusiasm and coverage were so much fun and so appreciated. Thank you, Diesel Books in Del Mar, for hosting the only signing I scheduled. I love your store, Diesel. Beyond that, what was left of my creative energy had to go to my clients because one of the mottos of my business is that my emergencies cannot become your emergencies. Life happens for all of us. We do our best to adapt, pivot, and write on. Fortunately for me, I love my clients and I get fed by our work together. So, as often happens when dreams get sidetracked, I found peace in the simple things of my everyday life. Maybe that's the point. I'm not living in a war zone. I wasn't suffering from long COVID. I had blessings to count. My sister, husband, and my son said I'd never been more present, something I hope never changes. Back to that night in my office, after just wondering if I'd done enough with my life, I saw so many books and categories of books with their colorful spines and beloved titles, every one of which I felt utterly connected to. Suddenly, instead of feeling like a victim, my writerly life felt like a long line of good fortune. On these bursting shelves, my eyes fell to my own titles, all those stories woven together over many, many years, reaching God knows how many people. It's true what I say, I thought. Books have a destiny. Then I looked over to those written by my clients. With each title, I remembered a squealing over coming up with the perfect phrase or chapter title or celebrating over Zoom when they inked their book deals. Dreamers together from start to finish, idea to sold. There were books on my shelves from writers who sent Danielle Laporte and me their books, because they'd read our Your Big Beautiful Book Plan and they used it to get agents and publishing deals on their own and wanted to thank us. Titles popped out at me from members of my beautiful writers group and alums of my book Proposal Magic program who mailed me their book babies. And there were those I promoted from the authors I've interviewed here: Glennon Doyle's Love Warrior, Tom Hanks's Uncommon Type, Lee Child's Jack Reacher books. Oh my God, are you as in love with the TV show as I am? And Saba Tahir's National Book Award winner, All My Rage. As my eyes took in the sheer legacy of these works, with the thought that I'd actually befriended some of these authors and they'd permitted me to share their best advice on my show and in my book, I thought, how could I ever doubt my value? How did I ever get so blessed? The easy answer is that I trusted my desire. That's how I got lucky, just like I coach you to do. You know my motto: if you have the ache, you have what it takes. I'd done the work, sure, 60 all-nighters in 1 year alone. I'd shown up ready to sit all day if I had to, or all night, just like the authors you've heard talk about here since 2015. The beauty of my commitment suddenly blew me away. I was the gal who graduated high school with a C+ average. I felt so proud of myself. And then my gratitude turned to something else: overwhelming, gripping sadness. I was now weeping as if someone had just died and I had no idea why. I asked myself, sweetie, what is going on? That's when I sensed that three of my books had something to say. It was as if they walked right up to me. They wanted to speak their piece. I lined them up side by side. My first one, Lives Charmed, Intimate Conversations with Extraordinary People from 1998. Generation Green, The Ultimate Teen Guide to Living an Eco-Friendly Life from 2008. And Beautiful Writers from August 2022. The room's energy felt oddly electric, as if I was about to learn something new from loved ones who'd been waiting a long time for their chance to speak to me. What do you have to say? I asked. What do you still need from me? Are we too tight? Do I need to let you go? Am I holding pain of you in my body? Am I weighing you down with my pain? Have I been a good steward, a good midwife, a good book mama? The questions kept coming, staccato. Each book revealed very specific truths to me, things I swear you will want to know for your own book writing and promotion success. But before they did that, I held each title to my chest, feeling into them. With Lives Charmed, I saw flashes of all I'd gone through to bring her to market, the story of which is in Beautiful Writers. I saw the financial burdens of quitting my job to write, the stress that put on my marriage, the funny networking fails, and the grandiose hope I clung to about the bestseller I was writing that would change the publishing industry to a more sustainable one. The book was given to me in a cinematic dream, so of course it was destined, and I had gone all in. I remembered the practical steps I took to get published as well, and there were many, and the magic. But the uphill struggles I'd experienced still felt sticky. Again, sitting on the floor of my office, candle flickering, I asked aloud, am I still holding the pain of those events in my body? What came up as I looked at the back cover of Lives Charmed, at the pictures of the people interviewed, was a sense of deep grief. I loved every one of those interviewees, stars who'd taken a chance on an unknown author and shared so much of themselves for my book. And yet, many of those faces staring back at me had passed away. Actor Efren Zimbalist Jr., golfer Arnold Palmer, producer and talent manager Sandy Gallen, ceramicist, painter, and author Beatrice Wood, best-selling author and Jungian analyst Robert A. Johnson, and supermodel and wild horse advocate Tatiana Petitz, whose recent death from breast cancer still slays me. I sat for a long while and let myself weep and breathe into the sadness of what was and could have been until all heaviness lifted and my tears dried up. I sensed that whatever processing Lives Charmed wanted from me was complete. That looking into each of those faces with gratitude and goodbye was the letting go I'd needed. Feeling light, I put her down and picked up my next title, Generation Green, a book I wrote with my teenage son, Tosh. I'd have thought this would have been my stickiest book. Just days into our 8-week deadline, my son and I found a video on my husband's computer with him professing his love to someone else while we were in the next room. Tosh was a senior in high school and about to head out on his own, and in an instant, he hated his father. And my world collapsed. Books? What for? Who cares anyway? I had no idea who I was without my marriage. I'd never written professionally without my husband of nearly 2 decades cheering me on. He was my biggest fan. Every minute spent writing in my mind, all those hours and commitment and years of sacrifice were for us. With him now playing dad to her children instead of our son, it would be a long while before I would care again about my writing or books at all. Let me ask you, are you sensing a launch disaster theme here? Yeah, me too. And I'm not even including The Will to Survive, a book I co-authored with a blind cop that ultimately had to be self-published after our publisher went bankrupt a mere 4 weeks before its release. That wasn't disappointing. After the drama of my beautiful writer's book launch, the patterns were pretty damn obvious. I texted Danielle Laporte and said, "Sister, I need help. Who should I call?" Danielle is one of my life angels. We all have them. Come to think of it, our co-creation, Your Big Beautiful Book Plan, is the only launch of a book with my name on the cover that was drama-free. Anyway, she knew just the person for me to call to end this pattern. "This has to be something within me," I told my new therapist. "Every time I release a book, the people around me lose their shit and or go into some kind of major crisis, and I slip into the 7th circle of hell. This must be a me problem," I said. Sure enough, in working together, I learned that family drama, all caps, where bad things happen during crucial times of dream fulfillment, is deeply ancestral in my family. Death and illness and the like go hand in hand with huge celebratory milestones. My family is probably not that unique in the human experience. That's a story for another time. Anyway, but holy shitballs, if any of this rings true for you, you may want to do some research into inherited family trauma and epigenetics and how the pain of those who came before you may be living within you and manifesting all up in your face. Cells hold memory. It's worth checking out, is all I'm saying. I'll remind you at the end of the show, so no need to rabbit hole search now. The question in my mind that night, holding Generation Green, was, why am I not crying holding this book? When I had to deliver her, I just learned about my husband's affair. I had another book deadline for a top publisher. I was fried. I delivered Generation Green 3 weeks late by staying up nearly around the clock. My original editor was fired, in part, rumor had it, because of the delay for what was supposed to be her big fall title with our little book. 3 weeks doesn't sound like much, but when you're dealing with a lot of people and departments and deliverables attached to tight timelines, and you can't guarantee your author will be able to deliver, the stakes get high. It wasn't like I was asking for more time beyond those 3 weeks to make the finished book stronger. No, but with my marriage in the blender, I'd been honest about the drama so no one would be surprised if I was slower than expected. It's hard to mail in your best work from the fetal position. Because we didn't yet have much history, they couldn't know about my work ethic or the fact that I'd never bail or turn in crap. I can only imagine how the uncertainty stressed out those editorial meetings. And yet, no tears holding Generation Green. Why not? Heck if I know. Maybe it's because she's still in print. Tosh and I are getting royalties. We're certainly not getting rich off of her, but she's printed on recycled paper. Kids love her and write us the cutest notes about how they're no longer eating fast food and they're shopping at thrift stores and taking shorter showers. Even one girl bought a rescue cow. The book's still fighting the good fight is all. So no stickiness. I took a deep breath and feeling complete with her, I put her down next to Lives Charmed. Now I had a buzzy, happy, warm sensation in my chest, but I wasn't sure it would last. I looked down at Beautiful Writer sitting on the carpet and thought, all right, I can take it. Give it to me straight, girl. But try as I did to feel the pain of the past year, I couldn't. Never mind that I hadn't entirely been able to champion the book I'd spent a decade writing, or that being optimistic about life in general with Hello World feels harder these days. And yet none of that stress was living within me. I couldn't find it. Holding Beautiful Writers felt like joy, like the kind of bliss I experienced biting into a piece of sugary vanilla cake. I can't explain why, except to say I don't worry about her. I love Beautiful Writers like mad. If she were a person, I would leave my husband and marry her. I would leave Brad Pitt for her. Not including my kid, this book is my favorite creation of my lifetime times a billion. If that sounds overly self-congratulatory, forgive me. But every writer knows the feeling of producing work that's not ready, and this ain't that. I didn't publish Beautiful Writers until I loved every single page, and that reality alone is priceless. I think what matters most, and this sounds cliche, but I had the time of my life scripting her. I don't care how many years it took. The whole enjoy the journey storyline was true for me. What I saw that night, looking at these titles side by side, from that 1 foot perspective that might as well have been 30,000 feet, was that every hard, small step was accompanied by a magical one. And all of those steps led me to a creation that if I never made another thing, I consider it the gift and work of my lifetime. How amazing is that to hold in your body? I did it. I did what I most wanted to do with my time and creativity. I am free. Then I saw and heard something else. The three books sitting before me that night each had poignant, career-changing truths they wanted you and me to know. I had no idea my book still had this much stuff to say, each giving me three distinct life lessons or book lessons for you, but here you go. Starting with Lives Charmed, the first truth could save you or make you a fortune. I know it saved my sanity a lot lately. Number one, when promoting your book, know who you are and go with your flow. This is so big. Maybe the most important thing I could tell you is that if you try to approach your marketing and PR in a way that's contrary to your nature, it will not work. You won't stick with it. Lives Charmed came out before online promotion was much of a thing. When Rhonda Britton told me I was at the top of Amazon, I didn't even know what that meant. Back then, people sold books via expensive PR and book tours and speaking anywhere and everywhere. You've heard authors talk about selling books out of the back of their car, and that was fact. That was a deal I was not willing to make. I had a young boy, animals, and a husband who needed lots of attention. When I wasn't writing, I was happiest cooking every meal, gardening, walking our pack of dogs twice a day, and playing tennis with my family. I looked at globetrotting author friends who were single, or didn't yet have kids and realized immediately that I wasn't willing to do what they did to sell books. I wouldn't mortgage my home to pay for an expensive publicist. I wouldn't leave my family for weeks or months on tour, not in the US, not overseas. I was still recovering from my mother's death, and my father soon got sick and needed support while he was dying. I craved security. I chose the least painful way to get it, by writing for others. And it worked. I was quickly in demand and got to collaborate with the most amazing people from home and write to my heart's content in my off hours. Yes, it was hard, but it was the heart of my choosing that matched my style. I think of the most prominent authors we all love, the ones I've had over and over on this show, and many of them, if you think about it, traveled for years, doing 100, 150, 200 dates a year. Most of them now no longer want to do that, but they were willing to for a long time. I was not. Know who you are. Know what you need and get honest about what's realistic for you and your life. I find touring a blast in small spurts, same with TV. But years ago, when the head of a network called me about having my own TV show, seeing me, as he said, as the spiritual Barbara Walters, I didn't even take the meeting. I didn't want to live in a Hollywood studio. I'm a homebody. I wanted a simple life in the forest and later in the quiet suburbs. Even my retreats are in the same place, my home away from home, La Playa Hotel in Carmel by the Sea. People have tried to get me to teach them all over the world, including offering me big bucks to take them to Dubai. But Carmel is my childhood and my happy place and where I feel most effective, tapped in, and alive. Thankfully, fellow homebodies, there are so many ways to promote your books from home these days. Magic. The second big lesson from Lives Charmed is one I wrote about in Beautiful Writers, and it's one everyone thanks me for, even though it's painful. Ready? Key friends and family members won't read your book. Probably not ever, and this includes your nearest and dearest. Ugh, this sucks so hard. I'm so sorry. I don't know why the hell this is true, but it is. If you haven't heard my interview with Mark Manson, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, he had a cool perspective on this with his books. A quick detour here. You might also enjoy that episode because we talk about our freakishly similar, quote-unquote, war stories from our ghostwriting / co-author days. Yeah, Mark is the guy who co-authored the hit memoir, Will, by Will Smith, which pubbed only a few months before that Oscar slap. Sales of their book got a quick bump before Mark says the numbers fell off a cliff and never recovered. Inherited family trauma for Will? Certainly a uniquely dramatic launch disaster. So what makes someone close to you not read your book? I have some ideas. I'll read a bit from page 154 of Beautiful Writers from a chapter called The Power of Shared Belief, Writing Groups, and Accountability Buddies. The format of each chapter, by the way, opens with a writer's universal dilemma or pain point, then goes quickly into my writing memoir pieces with celeb author stories scattered throughout in boxes where our topics align. And then at the end of each chapter, I close out with takeaways. This snippet is one of those takeaways. You're not special. It happens to all of us. Maybe your loved one won't read your book because they can't stomach the possibility of not loving it. Or they're sick to death of hearing you talk about it and resent how it steals your time. Perhaps they're short on time, or they love you for you and don't need further convincing of your worth. Maybe they just suck. All the more reason to find your book people. Remember, reading and writing where your first teachers gave you feedback, perhaps even gold stars, started as collaboration. Think about who you can bring with you on this journey that wants to be there. You may have outgrown those footy pajamas, but that doesn't mean you don't still need a shoulder to read on. Writing and world-changing are better with a bud or a group, as in richer creativity, a flatter learning curve, and stronger results, more sanity, and laughter. Fellow word lovers can help you blow past apathy, excuses, overwhelm, and writer's block. End quote. It never gets easier, though. A member of my family, who loves to read and who I couldn't wait to share Beautiful Writers with, still hasn't read it. Now, this person is nuts busy and someone I cherish no matter what, so this is my issue to get over. I did have to walk away at a recent family gathering to go to the bathroom to breathe when such and such was talking about favorite books. Ouch. But my healing around this is up to me. The third lesson I learned from Lives Charmed was that a small advance can be a financial godsend, making you more money. Hear me out. My first book had a tiny advance of $5,000, and yet it led to decades of abundance. First writing for magazines, second writing for clients, many other books my own and ghostwritten, friendships, teaching, this podcast, my writing retreats, products, and all of that saved me when my son and I needed saving. All because I threw myself and my lousy punctuation, at least initially, out into the world with that first pie-in-the-sky dream of a book, and I didn't let go. And therefore, it had to manifest. And it was in print for 20 years, which is a really long time. Of course, given the option, most authors choose a large advance payment to a small one. It shows that your publisher has more skin in the game. While you're hyper-focused on that 12-week deadline, how nice not to worry about funding that organic kale bee pollen smoothie habit. However, once the book's out, the stress of making a big splash in the first 90 days can be substantial. One of the blessings of publishing a book with a small advance is that both you and your publisher don't have to be so consumed by the numbers. You have time to breathe and find your audience, and you'll likely be in print longer too. Plus, you'll start receiving royalty checks sooner. Since advances are paid against royalties, it's easier to earn out your advance when we're talking 4 or 5 figures instead of 6 or 7. If you're a spender and tend to blow through your money quickly, a monster advance may not be in your best interest. And if you don't earn out, meaning you don't sell enough copies to balance the books, which unfortunately happens more often than not, it's a lot harder to make the argument for why they should invest in your future titles. In my mind, 2, 3, or more book deals are better than 1. Smaller payments upfront may just mean that you get to keep doing this thing you love a lot longer. Okay. Next, let's move on to what lessons Generation Green wanted you to know. Certainly, all 3 lessons from Lives Charmed held for this title too. I had to know who I was with regard to promotion. I had to keep my wits about me when loved ones didn't read her. And although my advance was sizably more significant than my first book, it was nowhere near as large as I wanted it to be, which again turned out in my favor. 16 years later, it's still in print. It's still earning me royalties. It's gone through many printings. But I did learn 3 new lessons with GG, which are: 1, if you can't live with the deal, no deal. Meaning, if they won't publish your Echo book on Echo paper, fuck it. I wasn't getting sap on my hands. You're the one who has to live with the results of your deal for years. If they don't share your vision, whatever that vision is, don't share your masterpiece. Find your people or assemble your own dream team when you can afford to self-publish. I recently posted 2 episodes with clients who've made a fortune self-publishing, millions of dollars. Listen to them and see how happy they are that they trusted themselves. While they were the perfect candidates for self-publishing, not everyone is. But life is too short to regret the things you could have controlled. 2, the second lesson from Generation Green may sound like it counteracts the first lesson. And in some ways, it does. Again, dualistic universe. While people complain that publishers are just printers these days, big publishers are still intimately tied to media and are just flat out more likely to get you big PR. That's the lesson. Big publishers equals big reach. No one can guarantee they'll use that reach on you and your title. They don't always. That is for sure. But access to key people, placements, and awards is more likely. I was so devastated by the breakup of my first marriage. that I could not focus on getting myself media. I was busy trying to save my home from foreclosure. And yet, every other day I was getting calls from the publicity department at Simon & Schuster saying, "You won another award. Hey, they're covering Tosh in Teen Vogue next week. Can you do an interview with Family Circle on the 15th? Even with my late delivery and my divorce drama making it hard for them to do much pre-launch planning, the media calls kept coming, and it wasn't because of what I was doing. It was because of the connections between my very large publisher and the media. I wonder how much more exciting that launch could have been if Tosh and I had been more ready to roll. Number three, while your spirit is infinite, your promo energy is finite. You will never, ever be able to jump on all of your PR opportunities. At the end of the day, do what you can and let the rest go. I have told this to so many clients, and I hear back a lot how much it helps. We are people living with limited energy and never-ending shit to do. With the internet and the PhD-level research you can do on your own around self-promotion, and with all the people you can follow who are doing amazing things to promote their books, the ideas you have will be endless. The opportunities to connect are endless. And yet, you still have to live your life, much of which has nothing to do with your career. Stuff like raising your little people, grocery shopping, and I don't know, sleeping. So you've got to find a way to rectify the things you could be doing and aren't, some way to let it all go. Maybe take up meditation, hot yoga, therapy. Kidding, not kidding. The systems you use to organize your PR can bring enormous results and freedom in this area too. I love how Hal Elrod recently talked on this show about his daily PR system that ensured his ticket to bestsellerdom. It took longer than he thought to sell his first million books, but with consistency, he didn't have to give it much thought. His good habits brought record-breaking sales while also giving him tons of time with his wife and kids, and now they're farm animals. When you make touching your PR every day a habit, like Dani Shapiro touches her writing every day, you can relax knowing you haven't left your book baby unattended in the corner. Okay, I'm still learning with Beautiful Writers, the third title that called out to me that night. But as you might imagine, the main lessons so far have been powerful. Coming in hot at number one, capture and conquer with screenshots. When you are hot, when all eyes are on you and your new book, or a heck of a lot more eyes than usual, it is tempting to think it will last, but it don't. Not for anyone. I'll explain. You might be thinking, but Linda, hold up, it lasts for some authors. All right, let's take the case of Brené Brown, the gal whose episode on this show got tens of thousands of downloads more than any other celebrity guest I've had here, including Tom Hanks, Anne Lamott, and Stephen Pressfield. Brené told a funny story you may remember. She said that one day she noticed her friend Elizabeth Gilbert had tweeted out something like, "Holy shit, Brené, you've got 3 books on the top 10 New York Times list." Brené was shocked. She didn't know. And as anyone would, she took a screenshot, had it printed, and posted it up in her study. "It was a moment," Brené told me. "And it was a great moment, and we celebrated it, and then it was gone." And she was okay with that. That's life in the big city. In the early morning hours of launch day for Beautiful Writers, it was tempting to feel like I was hot. We were the number one new release in a bunch of categories on Amazon, including overall new releases. I had no idea either. Every time I looked up, someone was texting me, emailing me, or DMing me screenshots, several of which you can bet I saved. The tweets and posts and online sweetness came in fast and furious and were so appreciated. I felt like I had an army of investigative PR agents. I posted a few of those screenshots to my IG stories and on Facebook and Twitter. By IG, I mean Instagram, my current favorite of the social media channels. Then I saved some of those images in my IG highlights, where they still live and still remind me of that beautiful early morning. In case you're like, huh? What's an IG highlight? They are tappable circles that you curate located at the top of your Instagram profile. They're a fun way to group and categorize your stories by theme, and they're always waiting for you or your followers to view, like a movie or a slideshow. Offers and PR opportunities came at me from every angle those first few weeks after my launch and continued for months. How wonderful, I thought. I'll get back to everyone soon, just as soon as my life calms down. But you know how that works, right? Calm can take a while, and many of those people sending you dancing girl and fireworks emojis and please will you come on my show or do this event with me emails will have moved on. They'll be supporting newer, hotter books. New is fun. Everyone wants in on it. So take those screenshots, because if you don't, you're going to forget quickly, even if you don't find yourself in the eye of a shitstorm like I did, and frustrated by your inability to focus on feeding and caring for your book baby once it's born. I still want you to record to memorialize the fantastic blur that is your launch. It's like your wedding day, when you're so busy hugging guests and dancing that you forget to eat, and before you look up, they're clearing the buffet. You end up ordering pizza. Later on, when you want to remember what actually happened on one of the most impactful days of your life, you can pull out the wedding album or your screenshots or IG book highlights where you curated all those posts. And now you get to relive the magic, because there will be magic, no matter if you had drama or not. It'll all be there waiting. The pics you barely remembered of that reader holding your book under the dryer at her beauty salon, another on the deck of a boat next to a hot pink bikini, a third snuggled up to someone's adorable horse. You can see examples of all of those and more on my book highlights. So much fun. A second reason I want you to have photographic evidence is to use in your future book proposals. As an example, I had a whole repost and retweet section in my proposal for Beautiful Writers. You have that proposal as a download if you've purchased my book Proposal Magic program. At any rate, I had a blast crafting the marketing and PR pages for that proposal, where I included screenshots of people who'd reposted and retweeted me in the past. Van Jones, Maria Shriver, Glennon Doyle, even Oprah Magazine. Those gems were a result of hosting this show, and you may not have an equivalent. I didn't always either. We all start as newbies, and you will have your successes. So get to screenshotting and saving for a rainy or sunny day. You'll be glad you did. The second lesson I want to share from Beautiful Writers is to be your own book advocate. Take the time to write the book you love and fight for the cover that reflects that love. I don't know if you've heard me say this before, but I tell writers you will want to agent your agent, not to be a nuisance, but to ensure they ask for what you want. As an example, you may not be able to get it, but always ask to have final cover approval. Your publisher wants you to be happy, no doubt, and they'll usually get the cover right. But no one will ever champion your book like you can. If you don't love your cover, it's going to bother you to no end. I loved all of the covers Ben Bella sent me for Beautiful Writers, but I wanted green leaves around the typewriter in the one I chose. They disagreed. I pushed back over several back and forth emails, and I got my greenery. It's my favorite part of the cover. Be willing to seem high maintenance, as long as you're kind. Your team will likely agree with you soon enough. As for the editorial process, I don't care how many emails or phone calls to your agent or editor it takes, even if you have to ask for an extension on your deadline. Get your book right. Once Beautiful Writers was in copy edits, my editor sent me an email saying that in this last round, I could only request changes if there were grammatical errors. So you know what I did? I read the book out loud again, caught 402, no lie, changes that I wanted, and sent the very long itemized list to my editor. Can you imagine? Very few were grammatical. The people-pleasing part of me felt like the most enormous ass, but the I want to be in love with my book part of me was skinny bitch confident. I knew we weren't going to be late on our release, and no one cared. My editors liked the upgrades and thanked me for all of my hard work because I caught some problems they didn't. They made 401 of the 402 changes I asked for. Whenever I look at my book now, there's a joy no one can ever take from me. I want that for you too. The third takeaway I want to give you so far from my Beautiful Writer's journey is to maintain spiritual or woo-woo practices before, during, and after publication. To know me is to know I believe in magic. As a kid, I could see a ghost that no one else saw in our house. She was a happy old lady, and she made me feel safe. My parents did not question my vision. As an adult, I prayed for my first husband at a spiritual seminar with the most specific and outrageous list of desires you have ever heard. I met the exact guy on the way home and married him 8 weeks later. Sure, it would have been wise to include monogamy on my little list, but live and learn. If you've read Beautiful Writers, you know how I went to a healing session with Guru Singh in West Hollywood and heard his over-the-top prophecy for my future writing career, my secret dream. And then things started to manifest really quickly from there. You get the gist. I'm a practical and yet highly mystical girl. You can take the girl out of California, but, you know. Here's my best post-launch advice. Get or keep whatever mystical practices light you up while writing and all the way through your launch in PR. Because I didn't. And I'll never know if things could have been smoother for me if I had. Did you hear that episode I did with Marie Forleo and Elizabeth Gilbert, where we talked about, as Liz said, dreaming our worlds into being? We shared cool stories about magical things we'd done to supercharge our bestseller realities. As an example, I told a story of looking into the mirror every night with a wink for over a year, saying, "Good night, New York Times bestseller." Then it happened in real life. My name at number 5 on the most coveted book list in the world. Marie and Liz had similar stories. If you've ever heard Gabby Bernstein talk about dreaming her publishing goals into existence, you know she meditates on who her readers are and feels the feelings of giving them the stories that will change their lives. Gabby talks of seeing and feeling every bit of being on Oprah, to the point of saying something like, "Oh, I've been expecting your call," when the call came in. Gabby delivered the goods, darn right. She knows her value. She trusts in what she's called to create. And then she not only doesn't stop herself from realizing those dreams, but she does the spiritual work to make herself a super attractor toward their fulfillment. I had been so tightly scheduled on the march to my latest launch that I got spiritually complacent and didn't meditate or visualize or affirm hardly any success for myself before or after. Wait, I take that back. I did one excellent 10-minute visualization that did come true. I pasted a picture of me next to Marie Forleo and made a graphic in Canva of the two of us together on her show, Marie TV. And when Marie's assistant emailed me with that exact offer, I gasped and sent her the graphic, which she loved. I can't guarantee that if you see yourself and feel yourself experiencing all sorts of blissful ease and blessings, that those things will come true. But oh my God, what have you got to lose? A few minutes a day to smile in silence and feel some kind of inner peace? Go for it. Namaste, motherfuckers. I just realized one other thing all of my books have in common that might be valuable for you. Let's call it a bonus number. I'm guessing this truth is true for you too. I live for creating things. That's where the juice is for me. When I'm creating a book or a podcast or a blog post, I feel most on purpose and alive. It's that cliche we always hear, right? The joy is in the process. For a quickie recap, now you know that when promoting your book, you're going to know who you are and go with your flow. You're going to keep your wits and your positivity intact when key friends and family members don't read your book. And you're going to celebrate your small advance, if that's what you get, knowing that in the long run, it may pay off more than you ever expected. If you're offered a deal you can't live with, remember, it's no deal. At the same time, if a big publisher wants to put their substantial weight behind you, jump if it feels right and watch that spending. When it comes time to promote your book, baby, you're going to rest easy at night knowing that you did your best. You'll never get it all done. And there's always tomorrow to create more magic. Along the way, you're going to be capturing your screenshots to post in real time and savor for later, perhaps using them in future book proposals. You're going to be your best book advocate at every stage and keep your vibes high with your spiritual practices. Amen. Wow, that was scary, but I did have fun and I hope it was good for you too. I recorded this episode before I left for LA for a week of in-person book promotion. See, I told you the fire in my belly has returned and I'm really happy about it. If you saw my social media, you know that I had a blast. I am a homebody and I love people. With beautiful writers coming out at the end of COVID, I hadn't realized until this trip just how out of the habit I'd gotten with traveling and seeing people. I want to thank Jill Daniel and her Happy Women Dinners for creating this space for such incredible conversation and community and party energy. Even pouring rain on the second night didn't slow our happy. When I got back home to Scottsdale, I wanted to continue the fun of in-person connection, and I drove across town to see Zibby Owens here at a blank event at the Literary Society of the Southwest. Zibby and I have been on each other's podcasts, and she was being interviewed by a gal I adore, Elizabeth Lyons, with the Write the Damn Book Already podcast, another show I loved being on early on. Thank you, Liz. At any rate, go out and meet your author crushes is what I'm saying. It fills you up. We writers are all too damn isolated. Have y'all read Blank yet? I just finished it. It's such a fun read. I can totally see it as a movie. I don't know how you do it, Zibby, but I love being in your orbit. I told you earlier that I would remind you to look into inherited family trauma and epigenetics. I am no expert. But a few books I can recommend are It Didn't Start With You by Mark Wallen and The Body Keeps Score by Bessel A. van der Kolk. Now that I'm home, I will post that blog post I told you about earlier on bookmama.com with a longer write-up of the key takeaways we covered here. It'll take me a few days. If you haven't yet subscribed to my free newsletter, do that now and you'll get the goods as soon as it posts. And again, if you're hearing this show later, you can do a search on bookmama.com for my greatest advice for hopeful writers, insider tools I wish I'd known. As a gift for my newsletter subscribers, you also get access to another of my very favorite creations. It's a 45-minute audio that I made outlining some of my best writing tips. I put a ton of time into that audio. It's like an entire best of podcast. Super fun listen. As you may have noticed, I don't have sponsors or official commercials here, but I do talk about things and people that I love. Like the shout out I want to give to Carmel Writing Retreat alum Bonnie Wan. Her recent book release, For the Life Brief, was a near instant USA Today bestseller, and it is monster good. Bonnie is a leading brand strategist, and she modeled the book after something called a creative brief, a tool used by the world's most innovative companies. Only with the Life Brief, you get a playbook for your life. You can see Bonnie's cover all over my social media feeds. In fact, you'll find other recent alum covers on my feeds as well. I'm about to write up my regular blog post with recent Carmel Purdy covers and links for easy ordering. So keep an eye out for that within the week. Speaking of Carmel, that fire in my belly, it's having me do more writing. So I'm only hosting 2 Carmel retreats a year now, down from 4 a year in the past few years and 9 at their peak. I always cap them at 5 writers each. So that's a new total of 10 women a year. It's super luxurious and high end, so it's not for everyone, which is why I offer the less expensive virtual option. But if you're feeling the call to work with me live in heaven, my next Carmel retreat at the La Playa Hotel starts on September 9th. I've changed the offer a bit, which you can read about on Book Mama. I found that since COVID, agents have been inundated with a glut of book proposals and manuscripts, and writers have been asking for a lot more post-retreat support, editing, brainstorming, hand-holding, and of course, agent matchmaking. They also wanted follow-up group calls after we return home to continue their momentum. So, fewer retreats, higher costs to me and my retreaters, but much more value with the same, although newly renovated, ocean view rooms and the most amazing catered meals. Thank you, as always, to Kevin Baker at Red Room Sound. Lastly, if you found value in this show, you can probably guess what you can do for me that I would love. It would make me so happy if you could read Beautiful Writers and let me know how the stories, both mine and from the celebrity authors, helps catapult your writing practice and results. Someone gave me the best idea at one of those book parties in LA last week. She said, "You should look at this time as the relaunch of Beautiful Writers. It's almost spring. Your publisher said the audiobook is almost done. Please God. And you've got your energy back. Why not?" I think she was spot on. It feels good to think of this time as my book's relaunch. So you want to play with me? If you've already read her, maybe leave 5 stars and or a comment on Amazon or Goodreads. Help an algorithm out. And if you've got a book club and want me to zoom in and answer questions, I promise to shower. Podcast interviews, I'm all over it. Got any blog or media connections? I'm open to all of it. Email me at team@bookmama.com. That's MAMA for mama. Or DM me on Instagram. You can find that link on bookmama.com or beautifulwriterspodcast.com. And when you leave 5 stars and a comment for this show wherever you listen, it always makes my day. I see it. I love it. I thank you so much. Okay, I'm sending you a huge virtual hug, my friend. Right on.